You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space, a monthly podcast of artist talks, panel discussions, and other events.
No mai, hoki mai. Welcome to episode 37 of Art Not Science. In this episode, we will be sharing the complete audiobook edition of Correspondence Issue 2, bringing the first volume of the paper to its conclusion. This issue writes back to our first issue with new contributors and continued collaborations that have grown from the relationships they all share. We will start by hearing the experimental text by Joan Fleming and descriptions of paintings by Terry Craven, which all grew from their conversations about extinction and embodiment that began in issue 1. Following that is the continued exchange between Komi Tamati Elif, Kirsty Dunn, Kahu Dunn, and Ayo Te Uruau Tamati Elif, titled Kato Adero. We will also get a glimpse into the piece The Inheritance by Sansintia Mohini Simpson, who speaks here with issue 1 contributor Shivanjani Lal about their shared interests and the works they have each made. Finally, we will listen to the collection of poems by SMA Ranapidi, titled Alba and the Atua, written in relation to issue 1 contributor Faith Wilson and their shared Clan Gun Whakapapa. Get comfortable, and we hope you enjoy this listening time.
Hello, this is issue 1.2 of Correspondence. I'm Joan Fleming. I'm from Aotearoa and so-called Australia, and recording this on the Wurundjeri country of the Kulin Nation in Nam in Melbourne. So paying deep respect and gratitude to the traditional owners of country here. I'm a poet and an essayist, a writer and researcher, and I'm here with Terry Craven, who I met in Madrid in Spain. We started working there together on the climate emergency. And we're both people, citizens, artists who've been trying to do something active and imperfect and full of feeling to at least keep track of the experience of living in a time of mass extinction. So I'm here with Terry. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I'm Terry Craven. I'm talking from Madrid, Spain. I'm a visual artist and bookseller. During my correspondence spans issue 1.1 and 1.2. If you haven't listened to the audiobook for 1.1, please go and do so if you can. So this is a collaboration of painting and poetry, and the paintings in process that were glimpsed in issue 1.1, you're now encountering their full final form in this issue. Joan's text is an erasure of the polyphonic essay we both contributed to Correspondence 1.1. The constraint Joan set up was to keep all the words in their original order, though tense and plurality could be altered. So now we're going to talk you through an encounter with our collaboration, which is found on page 4 of Correspondence in issue 1.2, titled Against the End, Remainder.
Thank you for the unbearable hello. We are only keeping track. The end you drop on a white page, shadows exact as the name of my life. What obligations do we hold open? Living names graven alongside who brought them. They smell our traps, the draw of the fallen, so easily human, silks, stomach, and breasts. The black accidental, also human, first conceded cause. You know, to thicken texture from loss, to conceive a way to order these takings into a dark broth. Bodies like black loops, loops, possible black on black on beautiful. With black, black, might a viewer ask, is there anything? Am I not? A bucket filled with spin will not hold her balance. So many birds mean nothing.
Record of taking into the body 1. It's 42 centimeters by 60 centimeters, made of acrylic, chalk, oil pastel, and pencil on canvas. The first two paintings both carry the same title, and they were worked together simultaneously. And their titles contain a pause, an absence, which is delineated by square brackets in the text and by an in-breath that you just heard when I read the title just now. So the first painting is made upon black canvas, initially with all black materials, textural layering of various blacks with midnight black and cloudy black. And there are words that you can almost read and some minimal smudges and marks of white. The words that you can almost read are the overwritten names of extinct species, primarily from the Southern Hemisphere, which were penned out over and over very slowly in an attempt to take these tragic traces into the body.
A set of minutes to the edge of drowning, right up to the edge. Panic this morning was muddy with nothing. Worlds are risky, surely empty of was. I observe you, small gesture, a black dot thickening the entanglement. Fact, the sick land we happen on bites every want to belong. Us, complex pest, famous for nesting, a fine bag of disorder, binging on power, living where craving lives in the lower path. A last night, a circle in dust, the dream's determination to exterminate while the dog feeds. What can a fledgling do against rats anywhere? Trees can't remove the mark, so painful to look at. Hubris, endless. The dissonant underneath names nature mine, supplier, waste. The riverbeds pool in rich red and aqua green punishment.
Record of taking into the body too. It's also 42 centimeters by 60 centimeters, made of plaster, ink, acrylic, pencil, oil pastel, and soil on canvas. So the second painting, which is a white painting made on white canvas, is much more visibly textural. Its layers of white are kind of chunky and built up. They're scraped and reapplied, and then eventually dried plaster. So for every name that was written on the blank black canvas, I would make a mark, usually in the form of a dot, on this, the white image. And the idea for this really emerged from Joan and I's discussion on the data collection that happens around extinction. How on the one hand, it's incredibly useful to have all this data at our disposal. But on the other hand, perhaps these practices are the kind of embody the very alienation that we have from the world, and this type of alienation that is part of the human destruction of the world around us. So I allowed when I was making them, the dot making, to extend into more painterly marks and lines, a kind of halting and organic process, extended from the initial conceit, traveling across the painting.
I know we are the body. And if we there in the body, where heat, fight, black, loss, and sleep keep piling up, don't want to continue, wild, sick, crumbled, I say that each dot was felt as death sprouts a new head of arriving blossoms.
A new head of arriving blossoms, 42 centimeters by 60. Acrylic, gouache, oil pastel, and pencil on canvas. So the third painting, I began specifically for 1.2, issue 1.2, and was absolutely intended to end upon a gesture of hope and connectivity to celebrate the body and the connection that continues to flourish between Jill and I, even across the 17,000 kilometers. So then the third painting is a kind of opera of color and red and orange and green against the white background, and it's definitely its defiant joy of color. The black marks, the almost readable bits of writing, these come through as well, as if they've been drawn from the first two paintings. But this one is all about singing, and singing and singing.
Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Correspondence, Volume 1, Issue 2, published by the Physics Room, Contemporary Art Space, in Ōtautahi, Aotearoa.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. Ko Aotearoa tamati alif tōku ingoa. No o hineho. Ko te ingoa o tōku kura. Ko te kura kaupapa Māori o te whānau tahi te ingoa. Tuatahi I... draw a hoe I te ariro, katahi I mahi au, tuatahi mahi au ngā lips, katahi I mahi au ngā te ariro, katahi mahi au ngā niho, katahi I mahi au te tahi rainbow ki ngā katahi I hanga hau tōku ake tāmako katahi I mahi aho e tahi whetū me ngā porohita me I mahi au he braces ki runga I ngā niho katahi I mahi au e tahi I karakara ahau I ngā lips katahi, I karakara ahau ngā porohita katahi, I karakara ahau te tāmoko I hanga ahau katahi, I karakara ahau I te aniwaniwa. I ahu mai I tōku hinengaro. Ko ayo tōku ingoa he pai ki ahau ngā kai pūtaiao. Ko ema tōku māma, ko komi tōku papa, ko kahu tāku hoa. He tino pai a kahu kia hau. Ko Kirsty tōna mama. Ko Sam tōna papa.
Mai, Kirsty's illustration, my half of the ariro or tongue appears on the left-hand side of the page, next to Ayor's beautiful illustration. In my drawing, I have left a tooth gap, similarly to Kahu's. I did this because for me, as a reo learner, I feel like my hapa, my mistakes, make me conspicuous. I feel like, I stand out because of that. And I guess it's a bit of a source of whakamā sometimes, or shame. On the left, between the ngutu or the lips is a matau or fish hook, referencing my original poem, Tongue Tied. The ariro itself is split into a few different sections. Written, there's four lines of script that border the ariro, and these are all references to hapa. Some of them are contained within the poem, the original poem, Tongue Tied. Others are references to mistakes that appear in messages between Komi and I arranging our project. Others are personal jokes, I guess, between myself and Ayo, between myself and Kahu. And again, these are based on misheard kupu or words, hapa mistakes in my reo. And another reference there is all the numerous names that I have, because quite often people call me everything but Kirsty. I've also drawn unaunahi or fish scales. These are references to the ika that appear in my original work. But between two lines of unaunahi is a black strip, and in the middle of that is a white strip, and this is a reference to the koro koro or piharo, the lamprey lighting its way, lighting an ara. Yeah, and at the bottom of my arero there are a few drips of saliva, I guess, or blood, and you can make of that what you will.
Ko tahaku nei tuhika, ara tohoku haurua waha o kā waha e whetero mai ana, he momo tuhika e whakatinana nei ka whakaaro i puta mai no māua kōrero. Koira te hua o ka kōrero a māua ko Christy, ko Kirsty, ko Kirsten, ko Kristen, ko Crispy, ko Leilani rānei. Inā, me ki atu nei kia tika nei, ko Kirsty. Kai waika tohoku tuhika i ka mea i tuhia e Kirsty ki te taha matau, me te mea a kāhu ki te taha māui. Nā, ki au nei he tohu tēne ki mea, he mākai me ki e whakātu ana i āhaku mahi whakamātau, i āhaku mahi haututu i te reo Māori, i te reo kaitahu me ki. I aku waiata, aku tuhika, i roto i ka kōrero me ka whakamārama kaiwaika i a māua ko Kirsty. Arā, ko ka whakaaro, ka kare a roto i puta mai i te wā tuatahi pānui au i te whiti a Kirsty, arā ko Tongue Tied, ne? Nā reira, he aha te aha o ka mea i tuhia e au. Ko tōhuku haurua te waha ki tō taha matau, kai ruka rā, kai te kutu o ruka, he niho taniwha, he niho, he koe, he mea whakatūpato ki ka mea kore mōhio ki tōhuku nei aroka ki te ao pukuhohe me ki. He mea whakatūpato ki ka mea Pākehā, kua kore mōhio, ka mea Maroke, ka mea takeo, e kore nei e kana ki te whai i te reo rakatira nei, ki te ako i tō tātou nei reo waiwaiā. Hei aha rātou mā. Nā reira, ko ka niho taniwha, he mea whakatūpato, kia kaua rātou e tono mai kia whakapāke atia ōku nei kōrero. You just have to go and learn to speak this beautiful reo in order to go and find out what I mean, instead of bothering me with your requests for translations of what I've just said. Unless it's paid work, of course, e hoa mā. Ai, ho mai tō moni. So below that top lip with the niho taniwha on its on it is a form of unaunahi on the bottom lip. No te whiti titoa e Kirsty te wairua o tēnā, te kiri o te ika, hey bro. So yeah. So he puka werewere, kai waika, he mea Māori tērā, he mea katahi anō nei, ko kitea e tātou i tēne ki rautau, no whakatū tēne ki momo puka werewere, no ka ana o reira, kāre he ikua Māori nōna, kāre anō he ikua Māori kua tapaina, tērā pea kua ngaro, ko matea atu rā, tau ingoa engari, ko te Nelson Cave Spider, tērā, ki te ao Pākehā, ki ōku whakaaro me tapaina he ikua Māori hou ki a ia. Engari, he kōrero mō tētahi atu wāpea. Ok, kai waika i te waha e noho pai nei ko tētahi taikawa. He aha te taikawa, atu i te iku o tāku ira mutu kai o te poti, ko te taikawa he momo rākau kia whakamaua e te takata i te wā ka noho, ka whakapāhake, ki te tiko, i te heketua, i ka wā onamata me ki he wharepaku tawhito i ka rā mua. Ko taua rākau whakamau, he mea kia whakamau ai ki te rika, me ki ko te taikawa, he mea tapu, nā reira ka whaimana, te mana o ka atua. Nā, ki te kau te toa, te tohuka rānei i tēne ki taikawa, mā tēnā e whakatapu i taua takata, kia taumai te mana o ka atua i te wā o te pakaka. Hai tāpiri atu ko te patu. He patu? He mere? He aha hoki rā. He wahaika, ne? Ko te tūhonohono ka tēne ki tāoka, tēne ki rā, kau patu takata, tēne ki wahaika i ka mea, kua kōrero tia, kua wā nakanaka tia, kētia e Kirsty, e Māwatahi. Arā, ko te waha, arā, ko te ika. Nā, naia, ko te waha ika, te wahaika me ki. He tohu hoki tēne ki mea hai patu i ka mea whakahōhā mai, ka mea whakararu o te ao ako reo, ka mea e whakātū mai ana i te whakamā. Ko tōhoku ake e whakamā, te rāpea, ko te mahi era atu, te mahi o era atu takatai e takahi mai nei, i tōhoku ake mana, e whakamā mai ana i au. Nā reira, me patua te taniwha o te whakamā, whakamate atura. Tērā pēr ko tēnā te katoa mō tēne ki wā, kai te pahupahu haere pēr. Hey, so nā reira, he kōrero anō hei tāpiri atu mā tēne ki whakāhua, he oi, kua pau te wā.
So i tuhi au ki tōku ārero, te Godzilla e breathing out radiation fire, ko Kong being a weirdo, ko King Ghidorah biting Kong's butt, he tooth gap ki tōku mea, and I karakara au I Godzilla's radiation fire kahurangi, nā tunia ko tira te tai o te radiation fire, me te ahi weta. Katai I kalora au I Kong, I te mawhiro, nā te me he burn ia. Katai kalora au I King Ghidorah me ana toru heads kōwhai. Katai I kara au ana parero. So, yeah. Oh, yahu, my tino whakahua, this thing came from. Well, my imagination. Oh, hello, ko tōku ingoa, ko kahu Dunn, o kahu Thomas Dunn. Tino pai a Godzilla ki aho, ko Kirsty tōku mama, ko Sam tōku papa. Tō reira, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa.
Paikare, akukare āroto i au e ruku wana ki roto i kā karekare. Koia te paitata, he oi, ua tā tāna. Uaua te ngau paipai i au e mau tā tātana. Patua rā i tēne ki wā e wera ana te rino nino, whakahiamo. Koi rā ko taku kararehe mana atua. Kā atua rehe e whakātū rā taku upoko pāpura, e ruaki kaito te wera puha. E tuhatu ana ki tau nā waha, e tūwhera ana maira, e kuha kuha ana apuku rua i te horo huare. Aira, kuare ka mea e kore are are mai ki au, puare ana te kiteka, hore kau e haupira. Tēne ki au, ko Māori tau. Te mauka, Māori a maira. Te mautakata, Māori a maira. Te takata whakamau, Māori atu. Te mauāhara, Māori atu. Te mauāhara, Māori a maira. Mau te roko, Māori a maira. Mau tō uene, Māori atu. Mau ake nei, Māori atu. Te mautū māro, Māori a maira. Ka mau te wehi. Māori a mai rā. Te maumau takata, Māori atu. Te takata maumau, Pōuri atu. Koia hoki, he aha hoki. Hoki atu, hoki atu. He rawe te roko i tōhoku reo Māori. E ki, e ki, te ki a te taniwha Pākehā. He hōhā, e hoki atu rā ki tōu nā hōpua. Kiki ana te wai te hoki. Wai hoki ko o kohi, kohi kohi tōweta, ehi e matira, ko te waha o te ika, he wahaika, he patue, he rātu, E kao, he rā mere ke, mere mere tūwahi, ko te paraire, kai te haere mātou, ki te wai, mātou i te wai, mātou raka i te korokoro, anā, tō moko moko. Ka karu e pōhiri mai ana ki aku karu, taku kare pō wai wai. Ko wai? Ko wai ui ui, he kare kare o te tai tai nui. Arā te reo pō hiri hiri, kaua hei hiri hiri. Te reo erere, te wai erere, te ika erere. Te manu erere, ti ere, ti ere, tere, tere tere, te pūkā were were. Kai te hia wai, kai te hia inu, pūpū ake te huari, te aro i au, ki hai are are au. Mō te ware ware au. Te koa, te puku katataka o te āhuataka. Ko taka te kapa? Arero kato,
kato.
Arero pipi,
pipi.
Arero mimiti,
mimiti.
Arero tititi,
ti.
Arero korero,
ero.
Arero hotero,
ero.
Arero wero wero, arero kuri pero pero
pero pero.
Arero kato,
kato.
Arero pipi,
pipi.
Arero mimiti,
mimiti.
Arero tititi,
ti.
Arero korero,
ero.
Arero hotero,
ero.
Arero wero wero, arero kuri pero pero
pero pero.
Arero, kōrero,
i
te reo whētero. Tai no atu ki te tero tero, he kuri ara he pero.
Pero.
E huri, e kero,
kero.
Tene te ruru, e whero.
E whero.
Tene te uruhi ero, ene ke kā karu kero kero.
Kero, kero.
Patua rā i tene ke wā, e wera ana te rino.
Rino.
Te rino rino whakahio mō koirā ko taku tino.
Tino.
Karare he mana atua,
atua.
Kātua rehe e whakātura. Taku upoko pāpura e rua ki kai tō te wera puha. E tuha tuha ana ki tō ngā waha, e tuwhera ana maira. E kuha kuha ana a pukurua i te horo huare.
Aira.
Huare ka mea e kore e are are mai ki au.
Ki au.
Huare ana te kite ka hore kau e hau pirau.
Pirau.
Arero kato.
Kato.
Arero pipi.
Pipi.
Arero mimiti.
Mimiti.
Arero tititi.
Ti.
Arero kōrero.
Pero.
Arero hōtero.
Tero.
Arero wero wero. Arero kuri pero pero
pero pero.
Arero kato,
kato.
Arero pipi,
pipi.
Arero mimiti,
mimiti.
Arero tititi,
ti.
Arero kōrero.
Pero.
Arero hōtero.
Tero.
Arero wero wero. Arero kuri pero pero
pero pero.
Tēnei ki au ko Māori tau, ko Māori tau, ko Māori tau,
ko Māori tau, ko Māori tau, ko Māori tau.
Te mauka,
Māori a maira.
Te mautakata,
Māori a maira.
Te takata whakamau,
Māori atu.
Te mauāhara,
Māori atu.
Te maumahara,
Māori a maira.
Te mauroko,
Māori a maira.
Mau dōwene,
Māori atu.
Mau wakene,
Māori atu.
Te mautumaro,
Māori a maira.
Ka mau te wehi,
Māori a maira.
Te maumautakata,
Māori atu.
Te takata maumau,
Māori atu.
Koia hoki he aha hoki, hoki atu. Hoki atu, he rawe te roko i tō hoku. Reo Māori tērā te take kua tatu. Kau, eki, eki, te kia te taniwha Pākehā. He hoha, e hoki atu rā ki tau nā hōpua. Kiki ana te wai i te hoki. Wai hoki ko o kohi, kohi kohi tōmata. E hi e matira, ko te waha o te ika. He waha ika, he patu e, he rātu e kau. He rā mere ke, mere mere tuahi. Ko te paraere, kai te haere, kai te haere. Mātou ki te wai, mātou i te wai. Mātou raka i te korokoro. Anā tō moko moko, ka karu e pōhiri mai ana ki aku karu. Taku kare pō wai wai, ko wai ko wai ui ui. He kare kare o te tai tai nunui. Arā te reo pō hiri hiri kaua hei hi hiri.
Te reo rere, rere. Te wai rere,
rere.
Te nika rere, te manu rere,
rere.
Te rere, te rere, tere tere. Te whare pūka, were were.
You are listening to Correspondence. Volume 1, Issue 2, published by the Physics Room, Contemporary Art Space, in Ōtautahi, Aotearoa.
They had birds and fishes under their skin, papery and translucent, as though they would disappear when they slept at night, disappearing into their blood, only to return in the morning. I used to trace the lines of initials and flowers, wondering how they got onto my grandmother's bodies. It was a comfort to see marks I lived in. I imagined dark nights and laughter ringing out as their marks were made, imperfect and fragile. When I touched them, I felt whole histories.
So that was Shivanjani Lal's correspondence from volume one. And I'm Sanchintia Mahini Simpson responding to that writing by Shivanjani in issue two. So thank you, Shivanjani, for inviting me to respond to your beautiful writing about your family and place and belonging. For me, it was very much what got me thinking was, what is home, being from a family, I guess, that has been displaced or not in a place that, a nation state, I guess, that we can call home. So what how do you belong and what is that connection? And I think for me, that's family and those connections to family. So your writing, that was really beautiful. But also what drew me was your discussion about your grandmother's tattoos as well, which we've talked about before.
I think conversation is a huge part of our, I guess, dialogue with each other, and the idea of, like, the invitation felt really, really natural to kind of be like, oh, I would love to have this opportunity to kind of continue this sort of slow building of dialogue. Or
I think our friendship and our relationship has been really pinpointed with multiple conversations that have been public conversations, as well as, I guess, our shared connections through the history of indenture and the sugar industry and the importance of family and matrilineal line, and those, I think, a lot of shared connections within our practices as well, and being here in so-called Australia, what that means. So I think it's been nice to respond in a conversation, but in a different kind of way, so through poetry and images, not necessarily a conversation. So it's nice to also include this literal conversation as well to add to it.
Yeah. It's nice to kind of include the literal and the kind of metaphorical. And I loved what you've been doing with do you want to talk a little bit about the images you made for the
I'll do that, and I'll read the captions and I'll do a visual description also. So the work in response, I've called it The Inheritance. So the first is like a two-page spread which says Ama, which means mother, and it's like it's drawn into sugarcane ash. So I've just, so the umma text is white or like a gray, and then the black ash surrounds that as well. And the next page, the next two page spread has an image of a cropped image of my mother's grandmother and great-grandmother with her brother and cousin on their laps, but it's a cropped image, so you only see the hands of the women and their saris with their long white sleeve shirts sitting against a tin house, like a tin shack house, which was normal for them and what they lived in, and with little babies, toddlers' legs dangling with white socks and as well. And on top of it, there's just a digital drawing of each one of their hands laid on top in black and white pigments. So I'll just also read the image captions as well. So the first image, Amma, is called, is with sugarcane ash digital photograph. And this image is just called The Inheritance, which is the scan photograph in digital drawings. And then following next to this image is a poem, which I'm gonna read, which, you know, I think is very much thinking about home and what home is experienced through. And so here I'm thinking about and talking about my mother and the trauma that's been inherited generationally through a story of her sort of like, you know, her relationship with her tarot cards. So it's a visual description of my mother, but you can read it in many different, like, and understand it in many different ways. So sinking into a dusty mattress, caressing dog-eared edges softened by time. They sound like a tongue clicking, disgust flicking. She folds them over like lovers, her healthy colored nails and sugar in her body, her DNA. She unfolds futures, her red bangles jingle, her hand glides as she sweeps them into one stack, the weight of the cards, the possibilities wrapped in satin cloth in her hand. And then the last image is another twofold spread, which says mother, also written into that sugarcane ash. So it's thinking about residue and traces and inheritance through, I guess, that trauma of the sugar industry and, you know, these parallel experiences that have been experienced through women, mental illness, and you know, various different results of that, I guess, that inherited trauma through, you know, that trauma of indenture as well. But I think the conversations we've had about my response to your work have been quite different than this response, and then me much more thinking about the tattoos that the women had and the people had. So when I asked my mum, like, this image here shows a tattoo on my mother's great-grandmother's hand, and my mum says, you know, all the old people had tattoos. And it became a taboo after that, which was obviously by the Afrikaans and the British, you know, making this tattooing a taboo. But she also says that people had initials and names of people, so it was a form of identification in case it was stolen or something happened. So it was also a security safety measure that was tattooing, or like an ownership thing. So it's a complicated relationship to that tattooing process. From her stories, and you know, I'm someone who has tattoos, and you know, my mother doesn't like them because of this association with tattooing as taboo and as being you know, something not good. But the fact that she says that all the old people had them, and you can see here the column design on, you know, my mother's, you know, my great-great-grandmother's hands. And your, I guess, tattooing in Fiji has many different relationships there.
Yeah, I mean, I think, both my Nani and Aji had tattoos, and so, like, for me, I've always grown up with old people having marks on their skin, not young people per se, and it's, and, like they weren't good tattoos, like they weren't like refined or anything, they were like quite like, it did feel like they were done in the dark. And I guess also, like, in growing my practice, I would be looking to find people from my community who made, and one of those groups of people were people from the Vingia project, and realizing that tattooing in Fiji is women's business, and then also meeting people like Julia McGeer Gray and Louisa Tora and Elsie Stewart, amongst others, who are all part of this Vingia group, sort of rewrote how I felt about tattooing, and also like for me, like that experience feels like a story connected to you and I. Like when I got my tattoos, I asked you to come with me because I was really scared. and then I remember talking to you directly afterwards because you couldn't make it. And I just, like, I remember feeling and sharing to you how I felt changed. And it was so surprising to me because I think also coupled with, I guess, the colonial expression and the taboo of tattooing, tattooing had always felt masculine. And my experience of getting my marks felt deeply feminine.
Julia makes it very much women's practice as well. You know, with Julia, yeah. It's women's practice, yeah.
And I just also remember feeling like I'd finally gotten this connection to the Pacific that I don't think I embody normally because I present as like a dark brown, often South Indian woman, like looking woman. But I'm not from South, it is one
North
of
Indian, Bihar, yeah.
But I'm from also in the north, but also I was born in Fiji. And so I think I deeply needed that connection to Fiji. And that was, I think, you know, like I, in so many ways, like I feel like from that moment, everything changed in relationship to my practice, but also like the marks that I got were marks that were on my grandmother's body that were also Vengir. And so it's a strange kind of bodily language or...
it's interesting because like after I found this tattoo, this photo of the tattoo in my grandma's hand, I realized it wasn't Mendi, it was a tattoo. I got these sort of hand-poked marks on my hands by another woman, like another woman of colour as well, and it was at home and it was a really lovely experience, and I've sort of continued doing that. And but I think, like, you know, if you look at the Indian Ink archive on Instagram done by Shlopoke, you know, it's mostly women who do the tattooing and women who have these tattoos, and they get sometimes, you know, these tattoos are done when they're children as protection, like these tattoos have meaning, they're just not there for visual purposes, they're like done as forms of healing bodily ailments, like if you think about acupuncture, like the tattooing is done as part of that, like to do, you know, healing can be done on men and women, but like predominantly the tattooers and the ones with the tattoos in this archive are women, and I think that's amazing. But yeah, they get them when they're children, or people have had them for health reasons, or they get them, you know, I think the stories that come with it are very interesting. But unfortunately, I think the way that, you know, with colonization in the British and India too, predominantly they're done by, quotations, tribal people. And I think there's that stigma against tattooing there as well. So I think it's interesting how the younger generation is embracing those traditional tattoos and designs, who are from different socioeconomic backgrounds in India now. But I think that importance of acknowledging the cultural place and how those practices are done is important. You know, I haven't done much research into it in South Africa because, again, it's like the old people had them and a lot of the old people, like, you know, aren't around anymore. So it's sort of hard to keep those histories and collect them and have people to talk to.
Yeah. I think also, like, one of those things that Julia talks about, or going back to Julia, is this idea of like old, but returning to like a type of new old, like not kind of understanding that it is not always a process of continual loss. It's actually like
A process.
And I think there is something really important about holding these histories in our bodies through multiple means, not like through language, but also through, I guess, a visualization, whether that's like tattooing or other means, like I think it kind of unpacks the trauma of those histories a little bit. Like it kind of recenters them away from a colonial perspective, maybe into a kind of history that acknowledges these bodies.
I think that connection to your history or your culture or your family through that mark making was something that I found really important in your what you had done, and also in your poetry and your writing. And I had been thinking about for some time, do I get that mark on my body? And I could have got it on my hand, but you know, as a response to your, you know, the writing, but also I guess our relationship and friendship and I guess like practice together in conversation, you could call that's what we do. I thought this meant, I think this felt right to get it. So I ended up getting it, which I didn't expect to do. I worked with a South Indian tattooist here based in Brisbane, who goes by Gangamara as her tattoo practice, Swastika Aya. And she helped me take this image, and which is a bit blurry because it's an old, small black and white picture, and make a column design based on that and put it onto my body. And I have a chronic health condition, which I don't talk about, endometriosis. So my body is quite a difficult place anyway. You know, there's a lot of pain with my body. And I think, you know, those female areas and that sacral chakra, as you would say, as well. So having it, you know, I had it on my stomach, just, you know, below my chest there. And it was very painful because having chronic pain condition, I have nerve issues and it did trigger pain. And so I think the bodily response to getting it was quite intense.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I did, you know, like, and I think I mentioned, I think I mentioned this privately as well, that physical bodily response I had was very like womanly as well. So it was an interesting experience getting it done, but I think it was an important thing to do. And you know, in the having it in that sacral chakra area as well, where I do have this pain, I think was an interesting thing to do in terms of those connections. And I think just sort of connecting to my family and having that permanent mark to connect me to my family that who are not with us and who I've never been able to share time with, and having that distance of growing up separate to these multiple places that I should connect with was a nice thing to do, but it was also a painful thing to do, like very painful, yeah. But I think that's part of it too, you know, like as you would say, the woman's burden or the woman's, you know, those connections in history and those, what, you know, what those things mean.
Yeah. I mean, I think often, I guess like one of the things that I was thinking about is that my marks are sort of on my hands and like on very weirdly visible parts of my body. But they're like maybe it's like a way to kind of like put energy towards the things that I am using that thing. But it's also both my grandmothers are no longer alive, and they've not been alive for a really long time, and actually I did not start practicing art like I didn't really start practice, like I never practiced art when they were alive. And so it's like this, like in some ways, like having these marks connects me to them in a way they get to experience the work that I make through these marks, you know, like as a sort of rewrite, like they help me rewrite the history of our community in different ways through these mark making processes. And I wonder if that feels the same with having that mark in a sacred space, you know, like.
And also it's not a visible place that other people get to see, and I chose in the end not to include an image or even the drawing from the tattoo in the publication. I chose to keep it private, but the experience and the process of getting it was part of the work, but it didn't have to be literally visible in there for everyone to see. And I think there's some things in our culture or in ourselves that we don't have to give everything, mm-hmm. Because we've had so much taken from us. We shouldn't be expected to give everything. So for me to have that as a private, like in that a very private place, which people aren't going to see, was nice. It was just for me. Just for me, and I can see it. So I didn't put it behind me. I put it somewhere that I could see every day.
I think it's like a good thing to have just like something that connects you to like your body, but also to all of the things that are both in your past as well as in your future.
I think it's you know, especially with, I think, connections to culture or connections to our history, ways to keep those stories and those histories continuing. And, you know, like doing that through the body is a very physical, like, literal way of doing that. I was saying it's sort of this, you know, what was made taboo, like, as you said, it was reclaiming or taking, doing these things that were sort of continuing those practices without the taboo and taking them back. And I think, you know, Julie's done that, and a lot of women she works with have really, reclaimed their marks, their traditional marks and their family marks. And, you know, some of them are like facial markings, which are very taboo in Western culture, but doing them and being, you know, modern working women, or like, you know, like who exist between, you know, this West and non-West these paradigms or these like what constructs of what, you know, spaces are. I think it's interesting and important in terms of that decolonial process, maybe.
I think it's I think that's like a kind of almost addendum, like, do you know what I mean, like it's an active thing, you know, like I think decolonization,
it's active, it's a practice, it's like living it through your life. And I think claiming things that have been taken away from us, or, you know, reframing them or doing them in our own ways is an important part of that. And honoring them and making sure their stories continue and they're remembered and acknowledged, because they want for so long.
They're still not.
So that's it. You know, we're doing that work. And I think that's all we have to really say. I think that's enough to share publicly, I think, about those feelings.
Yeah, I think so.
Thank you again. This was nice. Through distance, also. Through distance.
Always through distance.
Which is part of the story. I love you too. Yeah. But yeah, it's part of the story, I think, and it's that how we can continue this work and our practices and sort of keep you know, elevating each other's stories and supporting each other at work, because community is a big part of that, and big part of that decolonial process, as well as, you know, being community and not that individual mindset and thinking.
Showing up for each other.
Exactly. But keep well. Talk soon.
You are listening to Correspondence, Volume 1, Issue 2, published by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space in Ōtautahi, Aotearoa.
This is Issa Meiranapiri reading their work Alba Niatua. Alba Niatua is a suite of four poems that are all structured relatively similar on the page, 2 to 8 word lines down the left-hand margin. Alba Niatua is a response to Faith Wilson's work from Correspondence 1.1, I Just Want to Party Till I Die, speaking to our shared whakapapa of Clan Gunn in Scotland. Alba and the Atua. Dear Alba, what runs through this broken engine? What spat up out of Albion? What fuckapapa gets crosswired? The Viking anachronistically clicks on the image of themselves. Helmet adorned with horns. Two for each devil on their back. Eagle wings, eagle wings, eagle wings. These wings turn into a bird or seraphim, so many-eyed and many-wheeled, building their own way through the water. How meat did we have to make of life to get here? Fish and boar and other beasts. My own mythology of segmented flesh strike up conversation and the savagery of it. From where I'm standing, I can see all the tongues that the English have cut out. Did you bagpipe along to the gargling, blood pooling in the cavities of language? When it dries, you have a new red paint job, making everything brand new for the next four seasons, a breath that takes the ashes out. What weapon did they give you? What mascotted populace? The first of you to come here were on the endeavour, with that one that the Kanaka Maoli would turn cook. A part of me wished this line of blood never happened. Look at how much it spilled. Do I turn myself inside out, screaming peace or war ad nauseam? But it looks like you decided the Alba in Albion, the war machine chugging along, let me lie inside it and fall asleep to its rumbling, praying that the Highlands hadn't been so utterly compromised. That you never had to leave. A shadow or a snake? After Address to the Devil by Robert Burns. Did the devil exist before you lot got here? The fish of Maui had atua with their own ways of seeing the world, of being the world, but none to mark so utterly with horns. Before the devil came, Fiddle got to hang out in the dark like nighttime was something completely natural to be in. Then a story came from Christian mouths that turned us in Fiddle's stomach. Evil was uttered over their sleeping form. When they arose again, the creatures in the dirt took on a new meaning, and we learnt to carve the word evil into the night sky. Tartan. When I found the words for who I was or what it is I am, there was a knife-edge glint on the word woman. Transformed in the light of the sun just to see what it would be like, I started trying on my best friend's skirts. One was the colour of wet hair in a storm, the other a baby's blue room freshly gendered. I slipped one up over skinny jeans, some grotesque parody of early 2000s fashion. A preschool child trying on their parents' makeup. But if it was a kilt? Someone shares a picture of Oscar Isaac on Twitter. He's wearing a suit jacket with a grey kilt. There is no tartan. The kilt and the skirt, or the skirt and the pew-pew, would they all get the same reaction from men at the service station? I look up Gunn Tartan on Google. There are so many possible options that I'm overwhelmed. I save as a dream of who I was. Pew pew rustling around my hips as I swing the poi, as I whir myself into being, laying on the ground as my mother wraps me in tartan, secures me in the fabric. Would these moments have settled my disturbed stomach? The only gun I've met, a man who gave me a Marvin the Martian bike helmet for my 9th birthday, the house smelling of Christmas pies, or was it the slow turning of life into death? His funeral was the first I attended, the first time I learnt that celebration could look like a tear trailing down the cheek, bloodshot eyes trying to see where he had gone. I don't remember anyone wearing tartan at the ceremony. Nothing of that line made it into the church. The original colours have all been lost anyway. The sticks used to test the threads, rotting in the Highland mud. Tangaroa at the lock. Tangaroa watches his moko raise their head above the water like a finger breaking through a black line. The taniwha of the lock is cautious, concerned about more bad flash photography, still feels a kind of way about that first photo, monochrome and grain, when the monster knows there is no one except for the foreign sea sitting in the grass. They will climb up onto the land like a seal, all oily rainbow and flippers bounding like a dog, to visit the carvings, the long dead Picts left to remind us of their existence. Nessie thinks about crossing the short distance to their koro. How easy it would be to bound that gap between, but something stops them. And Tangaroa just watches with tears in his eyes. He has had time for some of his moko, oceans of it, but he never got to establish a proper relationship with this Loch Ness monster. The hours of staring at a screen and not pressing send, and the days of not even thinking about it, how long had it been? Was it before Tangaroa was even Tangaroa? Tagaloa, perhaps. When the domain of water meant everything.
That was SMA Ranapiri Closing Correspondence, Volume 1, Issue 2. You can sign up to the Physics Room's newsletter at physicsroom.org.nz. Or keep an eye on our social media for updates on upcoming events, publications, and exhibitions at the gallery. Our current exhibition, Invasive Weeds, by Hanapira Awake, Tarn Scott, and Wesley John Fury, is on in our gallery space at 301 Montreal Street until 31 July, and we will have a new exhibition opening the following week. An off-site project we are developing at the Ashburton Art Gallery will also be opening on the 12th of August. It's a busy winter. If you're interested in joining our art-adjacent writing group, which is currently seeking new members and is led on a monthly basis by Chloe Lane, head to our website and get in contact with us. We're welcoming anyone with an interest in writing that might have something to do with art. Thank you so much for listening. We really hope you enjoyed Correspondence Volume 1, Issue 2. Please tune in next month on Friday, 19 August at 8 p.m. for our next episode of Art, Not Science. Ma te wa.
The Physics Room is generously supported by Creative New Zealand, the Christchurch City Council, the Rata Foundation, Three Boys Brewery, Scientech, and the Crater Rim.